Hello again, everyone. Welcome to the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast, the first of 2025. Here we go. Happy New Year. And may all of your New Year's resolutions still be going on. They better be, because we're only in the first week. And if you've quit them already, then you never wanted to do it in the first place. Okay? Get to it. Get it done. That is the message for 2025. Put up or shut up. No excuses. Just get it done. Okay? Just get it done. My name is Brian Deanovellis, and we are going to talk UConn basketball, St. John's, Rutgers, Seton Hall, all of that, plus coming up, the Seton Hall women, the surprise of the Big East, predicted seventh in the coaches' poll. They are sitting pretty at 4-0 for the first time in program history. Not even the great Jody Brooks teams of the mid-90s went 4-0 in Big East play. So for the first time ever, the Pirates are making history. They are 12-3 overall. They are cooking. And I will be joined by Manasquan's own, Faith Misonis, one of the top 10 scorers in the Big East Conference. Really, top six, I believe she is. And she has truly transformed the Pirates this season, along with a super frosh. Faith Misonis will join me on the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. We're going to get to all of that in just a little bit. First, I want to say thank you to our Tri-State College Basketball sponsor, Mike Supa of RE/MAX Revolution. If you're looking to buy, sell, or list a home down the Jersey Shore, we're talking Monmouth and Ocean Counties. Give Mike a call, 201-988-2577, and tell him that Brian sent you from the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. All right, I want to begin with UConn. The Huskies are motoring along. They have won eight straight games. They are 4-0 in the league. But listen, this is not a fine oiled machine like we've seen over the past couple of years, especially not last year. This is a new UConn team that fans just have to accept. It's not last year. But the results speak for themselves, okay? This team is going to have to grind out wins. They're not going to dominate most games. Sure, they're going to overpower some teams, all right, and win some laughers. But you're going to see more often than not, especially when you've lost your second leading scorer and probably your second most important player in Liam McNeely. Other players have to step up and learn their roles. And hey, the good news is it's January. It's not March. So you have time. As Dan Hurley said afterward, following the second half comeback against Providence, we cheated death in this one, and we're going to have to win games in this type of manner. That's your head coach talking, not me. But this is how it is, okay? Listen, there's no excuse for not defending. There's no excuse for not rebounding. That comes with reading scouting reports, following the reports, and rebounding is all about positioning and heart and will. And for the first 25 minutes of this Providence game, UConn had shown very little to none of those. I'm talking will, heart, desire. I looked up at the stats at one point midway through the second half, and Providence was out rebounding UConn 24-11. That is very un-UConn-like. Unacceptable. But somehow in the second half, when UConn was down 14, whether it was the crowd at Gamble Pavilion, whether it was Dan Hurley motivating them in timeouts, whether it was the leaders, Hassan Diarra and Alex Caravan, whatever it was collectively, UConn found the switch. Because for the first 25 minutes of this game, 28, 30 minutes, Providence was having their way. Jaden Pierre, Wesley Cardet, They were driving. They were penetrating. They were scoring. They were dishing. Terrace Reed Jr. and Samson Johnson were nowhere to be found. They were MIA. Nowhere to be found in that paint. And everyone was questioning the Huskies' will and heart. However, things changed with about 12 minutes to go. It was Hassan Diarra hitting a three, and I believe it was followed by a solo ball three and an Alex Caravan three. Now listen, Providence was still scoring, but you could see UConn gaining its confidence and the crowd reacting to every three when they cut the lead from 12 to 9 and they got it under single digits. And you're like, okay, let's see where this goes. And it wasn't just Caravan and Diarra and Ball and Reed and company. It was everyone, okay? But more than those players, it was the role players like a Reed who didn't start in this game, like Aiden Mahaney, along with Diarra, all right? The unexpected ones. You don't expect Diarra to go for a career-high 19. You don't expect Aiden Mahaney to erupt for 15 points when he's been much maligned all season. And you don't expect Terrace Reed to suddenly find himself. All of those happened. You could see the wave happening. Mahaney getting the ball with about 5 seconds left on the shot clock, dribble driving and throwing in a little dipsy-do from his hip. As the shot clock expired, then at the other end, he takes a charge. And then Reed gets going inside with a little one-handed floater. And before you know it, UConn took the lead in this game. Reed with a couple of blocks at the defensive end. I said UConn would not get back in this game unless it began on the defensive end. They started getting stops. And the defense led to offense, and 1-3 became another three, and collectively this team gained its confidence. My three game balls went to Terrace Reed. Huge second half. All right? After the game, he said, "I wanted to play like a Kodiak," referring to Hurley's quote earlier in the year. You know, you can't be a panda bear. You have to be a Kodiak bear. And he became a grizzly, a Kodiak. He got mean, he got angry, he got nasty at both ends. Mahaney, good for him, okay? There was one play late in the game that UConn, under 2 minutes to go, was up six, and the ball movement was there, and Reed could have shot in the lane. Instead, he spotted Mahaney on a curl wide open on the wing. And Reed found him. You could see it developing. And Mahaney stepped into it wide open. It was pure. You could see as soon as he stepped into it and released it, you could see it was good. Put UConn up 9 with under 2 to go. For all intents and purposes, you thought the game was over. But Providence, to their credit, never, never gave up. It was a one-possession game late. UConn hit the free throws and held off, barely, but held off Providence for an 84-80 win. And as Hurley said afterward, we survived. We cheated death.
We cheated death in this one here today. And, we're going to have to win games in this type of manner. Even the way we're coaching our team, for us, it's like we're doing anything we can to support our team to find ways to win games. And it's not as dominating, and it's not as highlight-filled, and it's not as much as a coronation, the games that we're all coming to and coaching. But at the end of the day, we're one game behind where we were last year, and we're one game ahead in the league where we were last year after everything that's gone on in our season. So I'm really proud of the team, proud that they found a way to dig that game out today, and we got to address our issues.
This is going to be a grind this year. You're not going to see this UConn team go 18-2, 19-1 in conference play. Could they get to 17 wins? I mean, if anyone can, it's them or Marquette. All right. But, more than likely 15-5, I think – should do the trick this year, which in most years is a great, great Big East conference. If anyone gets to 16, they're winning the Big East, okay? That's my prediction. But more than likely, this regular season is going to come down to UConn or Marquette, unless St. John's can figure themselves out, you know, defensively and shooting-wise, and be more consistent. But right now, it's UConn and Marquette in a class by themselves at the top of the conference. McNeely seems to be out for a couple of weeks with that high ankle sprain, so they're going to have to make do without him and get through this grind of a schedule and see what happens. But, you know, UConn, they have guys who have been through the wars, okay? And that's what gives this team a chance. Even though guys like Solo Ball and Ross did not get much playing time last year, they're getting opportunities this year. And Solo Ball is one of the most improved players in the Big East Conference. He's an early candidate for Big East Most Improved Player of the Year. But you need program guys. You need these guys. You need the Samson Johnsons who are learning. You need these program guys who have been through the wars. And even Hassan Diarra was sixth man of the year. He didn't start. All right. And all he did was take over this game. And as Hurley said, that game was about Hassan Diarra and his will. A career high 19 points and 8 assists. Somebody needed to step up and make big plays and make big shots. And Diarra was the guy that led the charge, along with Reed and along with Mahaney. They were the catalysts. But you need these guys who have been through the wars with Hurley, whether they were role players or barely played or starters. You need those guys. They understand. They're the ones who can rally a player like Terrace Reed, who's getting used to Hurley, and a player like Liam McNeely, who's still 18, 19 years old. All right? UConn is just fine. It's still a work in progress. They've won 8 straight. They're 4-0. They're keeping pace with Marquette. They're in a great spot. Another team that's in a great spot is St. John's. But you didn't think so when they lost to Creighton again. When they lost to Creighton again because the officials swallowed their whistle. And late in the game, R.J. Lewis at Creighton, it was deja vu all over again. St. John's with the ball, with a chance to win. Now look, I believe the officials made the right call this year, unlike last year when Jordan Dingle got body checked on a rebound as time expired and the refs at Creighton did not make the call. Look, you're on the road. You don't expect to get calls like that. But R.J. Lewis, at the end of that Creighton game, and even Pitino admitted it, should have pulled up. Instead, his players collectively, not just Lewis, were trying to go over the Creighton defenders and not around them or not pull up. They were trying to go into them and they weren't getting calls. So St. John's rebounded from that New Year's Eve loss to Creighton and they faced a must-win type of game to avoid a quad three loss at home to a Butler team, which is good but reeling, to a Butler team which is still trying to find out how to win in the Big East after a 7-1 or 8-1 start, whatever it is. I believe Butler's now lost 7 straight. You had to win this game. Well, just like UConn, St. John's found a way to win when they weren't at their best. They were 1-for-21 from 3. I mean, when was the last time you saw a team shoot 1-for-21 from 3? Don't answer that, Seton Hall fans. I mean, they had good looks, too. And they were coming off a game against Creighton where they only shot it 9 times. Pitino encouraged them to shoot it, but clearly it wasn't happening. This team is now 3-for-30 in their last 2 games. And Aaron Scott, oh my, I thought that this guy was going to come in here and just thrive as a catch and shoot perimeter wingman who was going to thrive and shoot 40% from three. Oof. Did you see his stats? And I'm not just picking on him, but collectively, no one's getting it done. No one's getting it done from three. Certainly not Kadari Richmond, who's shooting like 17%. Not that he was ever a good shooter, but, you know, I see all those that player development is really paying off with Kadari's shot, right? Look, it comes from within, and I don't care if you have the greatest shooting instructor of all time. I said it before. Kadari Richmond is not going to turn into a three-point shooter overnight. He's been atrocious the last 2 years. 25% over his last season and a half at Seton Hall and St. John's. A career low 17% for him. Aaron Scott, 0-for-9 in Big East play. 0-for-9. He's averaging 2 points in his last five games, Aaron Scott is. So offensively, you know, this team really needs to figure itself out. Sim Wilcher is trying to figure it out. There's a lot of players, okay? Kadari Richmond, we'll get to him. But this team is not shooting it from three. So what do they do well? They press. They get out in transition. Fast break. They turn you over and turn you over into points. That's what they do well. So you know what? Stick to that. And they beat you up inside. Okay? Stick to that. Just because today's era of basketball says you have to shoot the three doesn't mean you have to win shooting the three. This isn't the NBA. Okay? You're not the Boston Celtics. This can be done doing what you do best. So go to what you do best. Seton Hall proved that last year. They weren't a great three-point shooting team. Now, there's going to come times in the game, sure, when you need to hit three-point shots, but they had one three-point shooter last year, Seton Hall. Alamir Dawes. He was the only threat. St. John's has guys who can shoot threes. They have to prove that they have guys who can make threes. And until they do that, stick with what you know. Because in this second half St. John's, they showed up. It was a horrendous first 20 minutes. Stop me if you've seen this movie before. They trailed by 7 in the second half. And St. John's finally got it going. They turned Butler over. Their second half, Butler didn't know how to respond. All right? St. John's forced 12 second-half turnovers. They got out and ran. They had 15 fast-break points in the second half, 27 fast-break points. That's a lot. 27 for the game. R.J. Lewis had one of his best all-around games, 20 points, 11 rebounds. Zubi was terrific. Named to the Big East honor roll again, 14-8. He is really, really right there. I mean, between Zubi and Solo Ball, they're your most improved players in the Big East right now. Zubi and Ball. But it was this full court press, and it was Kadari Richmond. Yes, Kadari's numbers are down across the board. Everyone's talking about it. I've been talking about it for weeks. Shooting percentage down, points at an all-time low. This is going back to his freshman year when he was at Syracuse. Lowest point total, shooting percentage from three. My goodness, free throws. Hello, Kadari. He was an 81% free throw, 81 last year at Seton Hall. Now he's a 44% free throw shooter. He can't even make one of two. So with Kadari, it's truly between the ears, okay? But for 5 minutes, he took over this game. And like Hassan Diarra, he was the reason why St. John's won this game late. In the final 5 minutes, Kadari was a Big East first teamer. A couple of steals, big layup, great assist to RJ Lewis for a slam, made free throws. Yes, I said that. Kadari made free throws. And in the last 5 minutes, he took over this game. And afterward, Patino gave Kadari credit. And he also said, this team does not listen. So here's Patino unplugged.
Young people today are different. I'm struggling with it. Now, I'm not quitting like some coaches, but I really am struggling right now with a lot of things. Listening, the work ethic's great. The listening is really bothering me. So many things are bothering me right now that I gave up drinking for New Year's, but I think I'm going to have the shortest resolution in the history of mankind. And I'm going to jump right back in. Coaching this team will age me about 20 years with the listening part. So, but I'm very pleased with the win. We did a very good job defensively. We just struggled at the offensive end doing certain things.
What specifically is bothering you?
The listening.
But like listening in terms of you?
Scouting of how we're playing certain things. Like, for instance, like the end of the game, that whatever we do, we don't want to trap the corner and we just run and trap the corner. You know, things like that. Nothing intentional, just that they're very respectful. They hear what you're saying, but they don't listen to scouting reports. And these coaches are working hours upon hours upon hours, breaking down film. And for instance, in the first half, they're using a power forward one screen. And we're switching it, and he's just backing him in and getting the easy shot. That was supposed to be a trap. So it's things like that that are getting to me a little bit.
I've heard that before from Coach Patino. That is way back in 1986 at his basketball camp at Providence, because coaches like Patino have been saying that for years. All right? You hear, but you don't listen. Well, what the hell does that mean? What it means is you hear me talking, but you're not listening to what I'm saying. You're not paying attention. Look, he's hilarious, right? I'm going to go back to drinking. Patino knows how to use the media. Patino tries to get his point across to his team in practices. And if that doesn't work, guess what? Uncle Rick is going to the media and he's going to shred you, no matter who you are, in public to the media. He's trying to get his point across. They need to pay better attention to the scouting report. This team's better with their lateral quickness, aren't they? But they don't listen. So look, if he wants to stay in this game, and he's not quitting. And by the way, nice shot at Jim Larrañaga and Tony Bennett, huh? I'm not going to quit like some coaches. Whoo! Zing! Take that, Tony Bennett and Jim Larrañaga, quitting a week before the season and halfway through the season, like you didn't know what you were getting into. All right, finish the season. Jeez, walking out on players. Please, finish the season. Look, we know that Patino's, you know, closer to retirement, a lot closer to retirement than he is at signing an extension. So enjoy him while you can. They have to win this year. Right now, I think they're the third best team in the Big East, still at 3-1. Villanova's right there, and so is Georgetown. You know, those three teams, it looked like, right now, looks like St. John's, Georgetown, and Villanova will be fighting it for third place. And how cool is that? Three OGs right there. All right. Villanova, St. John's, and Georgetown. Great to see Georgetown turning things around. The Big East needs Georgetown. And we know how much better the Big East is when Villanova's winning. But look, St. John's is there. They're 3-1. And if they listen, look what's up ahead. They're playing who? The teams I just mentioned. They're playing Georgetown twice. They host Villanova. They're playing Xavier twice. who's right there as well. And Xavier is likely going to get their best player, Zach Fremantle, back soon. Reports are he's practicing. It's not a season-ending injury again. He's practicing. So he could play Fremantle in one of those two games, if not both. So you're getting an improved Xavier team. It's a big month, all right? Plus, you go to Seton Hall, and we know how much, no matter what Seton Hall's record is, St. John's has not been able to win there. So this is a month where, yes, they're not playing UConn or Marquette, but this is a month where St. John's is playing for positioning, and they have a chance to get an upper hand on teams that they are fighting with for third place. So big month ahead. Brady Dunlap is not coming back, so they need to figure out their three-point shooting woes, get in there and shoot, but more importantly, stick to what they do well and make that your DNA. All right. I don't want to spend much time on Seton Hall because we sound like a broken record, but here's what I want to say about the Pirates in 2 minutes or less. All right. They were so non-competitive. It was embarrassing at Xavier. All right. And right now you have one player doing anything. It's Isaiah Coleman. And somehow, some way, if Seton Hall is going to win a game this year and they face a must win of all must wins against DePaul, if it's not going to happen against DePaul on January 8th at home, then it's seriously time to wonder if Seton Hall is going to win a Big East game this year. I don't know if they're going to win a road game if they give any effort like they did, because I saw a team that gave up. They showed no heart. There was no desire. Once Xavier got up by double digits, the game was over. The game was there was never a chance Seton Hall was going to even get back into this game and get it under single digits. And the only reason that anyone was doing anything was Isaiah Coleman. All right. He's the only one doing anything out there. Chauncey Jenkins, what has happened to him? I don't want to hear about his knee injury. I don't see a brace. All right. He's fine. It's with him, it's between the ears. But here's what I would do. You're looking at a team that clearly has no point guard. Garway Duel is not the answer. Played 5 minutes in that loss, had two turnovers, 0 points. All right. You got to start Jasim Felton. I've been saying it for weeks. Give this kid playing time. He's the future. I don't care if he lacks defensive footwork, because who on this team is playing any defense? All right. Nobody's playing defense because they're not scoring and they're sulking. So I'd rather take Jasim Felton and take my chances with him offensively and let him learn defensively. Let him make his mistakes. That's the only way he's going to learn. Because would you rather have Jasim Felton, who can give you 9, 10 points and hit a three and get this offense jump started? Would you rather have him and somebody who's a weak defender? Or would you rather have Garway Duel, who's an awful offensive player, who's an awful point guard, who has no jump shot, who's no threat out there, who dribbles into double teams with his head down, loses the ball, kicks the ball, has no confidence, and plays zero D? Which one would you rather have? Well, I understand that I'm not the head coach, but at some point, you're playing for your future. And if you lose Jasim Felton and he loses, then you have no point guard once again. And where are you getting your point guard next year? So, yes, they want to win this year, but it's so much about next year. And you need to develop and retain Isaiah Coleman at all costs. Develop and retain Jasim Felton at all costs. Develop and retain God's will, Ariarian, okay, at all costs. And Manny Okorafor. These are guys you're going to need. And especially Scotty Middleton. Get these guys in the starting lineup now. Now is the future. You need to be able to retain these guys. All right? I would start a core of four at center. I would start Coleman and Felton in the backcourt. I would start Scotty Middleton. And then whoever you want after that. Dylan Adeyewusu, fine. Okay? I want Gus Yeldon off the bench. He is your future. I see something there. He's a spark plug. All right? These are the guys you need to retain and keep and make sure that they're there. But big week ahead. Huge must-win game for Seton Hall. Let's see how Shaheen plays it. We'll know from his starting five. We'll know from the first 8 minutes of this game with his rotation how many minutes these guys get in the first half. And just because Jassim Felton lets a guy go baseline and beat him for a layup doesn't mean you yank him. That's not the way he's going to learn. That's my opinion. All right, and I'm sure a lot of other Seton Hall fans out there share that opinion. All right, now let's get to Rutgers. 2025 has not started off well for Rutgers. The Scarlet Knights were without their best player in Dylan Harper against an Indiana team that was ripe for the picking once again, and not even a career high out of Ace Bailey could do the trick. Why? Because as I've said all year long, and as Rutgers fans have come to know, Rutgers role players just aren't good enough right now. And they're running out of games, okay? Because now they're getting into the meat of their home schedule, a rarity, three straight home games against Wisconsin, Purdue, and UCLA that are going to make or break Rutgers' season, period. And Indiana, for all intents and purposes, has been Rutgers' ragdoll for the good part of 6 years. Rutgers had won 9 of 11 during this stretch over the Hoosiers, where Rutgers outcoached them, outmuscled them, out-hustled them, out-everything them, just pushed them around. But this time, even without their best player, Indiana still pushed Rutgers around in this game. Now, would Dylan Harper have made a difference? Absolutely. Dylan Harper was coming off the first triple-double in Rutgers history since the great Roy Hinson in 1983. Dylan Harper, as you've heard me say, is not only the best freshman in the country, but might be the best player in the country. First team All-American. So you're taking that player off an already thin Rutgers team and asking them to win on the road in the Big Ten, where it's awfully hard to win, see Ohio State. So, a very tall task. And even with, like I said, Ace Bailey doing everything he could, and Ace Bailey was unguardable, this game felt like a showcase for Ace Bailey and the NBA scouts. It was like Ace Bailey was out there going 1-on-5 at times. And that's what you're going to get out of Ace Bailey. But it's clear you can't win 1-on-5. You can't win 2-on-5. And that's what Rutgers is being asked to do most games. They can't defend the three. They've had trouble defending the three all year long. They've had trouble defending inside. Indiana, one of the worst three-point shooting teams in the Big Ten, hit 12 three-pointers. Let me repeat. One of the worst three-point shooting teams in the Big Ten hit 12 three-pointers. My God. What is Iowa going to do? What is Wisconsin going to do? A team that just set a Big Ten record with 21 threes. If you can't defend the three, I guarantee all of these practices, Rutgers has worked on defending the three, but the problem is if you can't have guys on your own team who can shoot them, how are you going to defend them? But at least you can assimilate the shooting in practice if you can't assimilate the making, if you know what I mean. So, I mean, Luke Goody, Trey Galloway, Mackenzie Mbako, Roselle Catholic, oh, by the way, co-Big Ten Freshman of the Year last year, Mackenzie Mbako, had 16 points for Indiana. I mean, those guys were killing Rutgers, and they couldn't do anything to defend it. I mean, throw away Anthony Leal's, you know, turnaround 45-foot prayer off the glass at halftime. Maybe the second half is different. I don't know. It certainly gave Indiana a lot of momentum going into the second half. But look, just too many three-pointers. You cannot allow a team that many looks without changing what you're doing. Too many offensive rebounds. Too many second-chance points. Indiana beat Rutgers the same way that Rutgers would beat up on Indiana. And look, Umar Balo's a beast, okay? He is just a man-child. So he's going to do that night in and night out when Big Ten teams have good big men. 17-12. But it was just, you know, at some point, you got to put a man on a body. At some point, you got to put your ass on their kneecaps. You know, get your butt in their midsection. Box out. Put a man on a body. Just, you know, make them go over your back. Make them earn it. Too many little things have just gone and disappeared. It's a shame. All right. Nobody thought that they would be in this situation, 8-6, 1-2 in conference play. Nobody predicted that. Maybe Blue Ribbon did. Maybe Blue Ribbon, who I think, you know, predicted them 15th. Maybe they had it right. But no one outside of that predicted this. And they're going to have to find a way out of it. And there's only one way to find your way out of this. Win. It starts with defensive intensity, defensive pressure. This team is not going to outscore their opponents. I've said it for months, for weeks. They're going to have to defend. Their role players are going to have to get more consistent. Jeremiah Williams, Jermichael Davis, Zach Martini, hello. You know, guys are going to have to grow up. Lathan Somerville. Jordan Durkak's giving you everything he got, but, you know, he's a fringe Big Ten player. Is he a role player in the Big Ten? Absolutely. But it's clear, you know, he shouldn't be starting on most Big Ten teams. All right? I love him. I love his intangibles. I want him on my team. But, you know, he's doing everything he can. And I'm not going to pick on Jordan Durkak because I love him and I love what he brings to this team. You know, Tyson Akoff, hello. It's time. Otherwise, it's not going to happen. They need to step up. Hopefully, Dylan Harper is well enough to go. Wisconsin, Purdue, UCLA, all coming to Piscataway. If Rutgers doesn't win 2 out of 3, then this season is on life support. They need to find a way to win 2 out of 3. Because then they're at Nebraska, who's damn good, and at Penn State, who's out for revenge, and a neutral site against Michigan State at Madison Square Garden, who's improving by the week. And then at Northwestern, who's very good as well. So Rutgers will be underdogs against Purdue, against UCLA, at Nebraska, at Penn State, Michigan State on a neutral court, and Northwestern. They're going to be underdogs for all of those games. So they got to find a way. They need Dylan Harper on the court, and their role players need to find a way to chip in and grind out some wins. Otherwise, this season is going to be over before the calendar hits February, and it may be over by the time we get to Martin Luther King Day when they play at Penn State. if they don't turn things around now. Okay, so now let's pivot and talk women's hoops. And the early surprise in the Big East has to be Seton Hall. The Pirates are 12-3 overall, 4-0 for the first time ever in Big East play. Not even the great Jody Brooks teams in the mid-90s ever started 4-0 in the Big East. Tony Bazzella's women are cooking right now. And last week in particular, they won two games in spectacular fashion. First, they stunned Villanova on a buzzer-beating, over-the-shoulder circus shot by Manasquan's Faith Misonis. Then they beat Georgetown in overtime on Saturday, thanks to a career-high 27 points from Jada Eads. So here to talk about this spectacular week and the season that is for Seton Hall is the aforementioned Faith Misonis. Faith, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, my pleasure. So, all right, I mean, where to be begin? You know what? I'm going to begin with the most recent award. You were just named, as of today, Big East Women's Player of the Week. You've been on the honor roll for several times. This is a first-time honor for you, isn't it? What's it like?
Man, it's really cool. It's definitely very exciting, and I'm definitely honored to be named Big East Player of the Week.
So let's go back to that game against Villanova. Let's start there before we get to Georgetown. All right, and whoever's listening, if you haven't seen this shot, just Google Faith Misonis buzzer beater, and it's all over the internet. Faith, you're down one, and Villanova shooting the free throw, 6 seconds left. Take us through what's going through your mind at the line and what happens in the next 6 seconds.
Yeah, I mean, Villanova got the chance to shoot two free throws. We had zero timeouts. So at that time, even before the free throws were taking place, I'm looking at my team. I'm like, guys, if she makes one free throw, we need a two. She makes both, we need a three. And little did we know, with the little luck of the hand we got, she missed both free throws, but we didn't have a timeout. So we had to get the rebound, go down. We didn't really have a play. We were kind of just going to chuck and hope it goes in.
There was nothing. There's no like, hey, we're running. Buzzer beater. Nothing.
I mean, sometimes, yeah, you have something you want to do or who you want the ball to, whose hands you want the ball in, but there's no really true preparing you for the rush that position you're in. So, you know, my teammate Kaden, she got the rebound, and me and my other post Yaya were at the bottom trying to box out for the free throw, and we're sprinting down the court. I'm like, oh my gosh, no one's guarding me. And I think that was the fastest I've ever run in my life. I went from the other end down to the block, and I was open. No one was guarding me. And my teammate Amari was trying to point to me to tell the girl with the ball to pass it. I don't think she saw me. And then, man, Amari got me the ball, but I was under the basket. So I was like, oh gosh, if I shoot this, I'm going to miss, blah, blah, blah. And then I didn't even realize there's four people on me. And I practiced that shot, my little, you know, under the rim reverse layup. I do that all the time. So it was nothing truly out of the blue. I'm just glad it went in.
You said you practice it. And would you know it, there's videos of you on the internet. Jersey Sports Zone, for one, had you doing that at Manasquan. Mm-hmm. So apparently you do practice it.
I do. I've done it in a game before. I think I almost got my 1,000th point on that in college too. So that was pretty cool.
So what, listen, you're in your backyard and it's just something that you're just like, hey, you never know if I'm going to use this.
Yeah. I mean, US hoops growing up from New Jersey, you know what that is. The reverse layup. My mom taught it to me. My trainers taught it to me. I used to do it all the time. It was definitely like something I used to get it's the muscle memory of just doing it.
Yeah, but it's one thing to go yes, you're right. It's one thing to go under the hoop and reverse layup. We see it all the time, but we're not really seeing back to the basket. You know, that's something you're doing. You're shooting horse in the backyard with your siblings.
Mm-hmm. That definitely helped too. We used to have our little court. We used to play all the time.
Wow. Wow. So, it's not luck then, Faith, you know, maybe there's a little luck's involved, but I guess, you know, muscle memory. That's cool.
There was a little luck involved, that I can say.
So how did you know you still had time to pivot? And I mean, there's 6 seconds. Most people, and I just saw it last week. I forget who it was. Somebody had 4 seconds and they took one dribble and they heaved up a half court shot in a men's game with like 3 seconds left. It's like, No, you still had 2 more seconds. But like you said, you don't know what to do in that situation.
The heat of the moment.
So what gave you the presence of mind that you still had time?
Oh, man. I honestly didn't even know how much time was on the clock. I just knew if I were to pass it out, I don't think it would have been enough time to get a shot up and a rebound if there was a miss.
Yeah.
I was right by the basket. And our coaches always say, you know, if you're in the paint, score the ball. So my mindset is like, look, the clock's winding down. It's got to be a shot. And luckily, I got it up in time.
Awesome. Awesome. So, all right. So listen, sometimes the best plays are, you know, you don't need a timeout. And it's just people playing basketball and using their instincts. So clearly your years are paying off. The instincts go for you there. So now you have to follow up that emotional win over Villanova and play a very good Georgetown team at home. And this was a game, I didn't realize this until I was looking through the write-up. You guys took the lead in this game by 3. The game's tied, and you hit a 3 late in the game with 3 seconds left to put you up. And then they tie the game on some crazy buzzer beater.
Mm-hmm.
What happened there?
Man, that was a thrilling game. Our coaching staff, you know, when we're doing the scout on the team, they told us this is going to be the hardest game you've played so far. You know, we're coming off that high from Villanova, getting that win. So we really need to be locked in. But Caden Lawson hit a 3 in the corner, put us up, and we're celebrating. Didn't realize, you know, there's still a few seconds. Georgetown gets the ball in really quickly. And their best, you know, 3-point shooter who has hit that shot to win a game on a buzzer beater in the past, hit another one to tie the game, send it to overtime. We watched film on that exact play that happened. I believe they were playing Richmond at the time.
Wow.
Yeah. So we knew it could have happened. But you know what? Sent us to overtime, gave us a little more of a challenge, and we learned a lot about ourselves in that overtime game.
Okay. So what is, you know, you go from the thrill of victory to what just happened. Now you have 5 minutes of overtime. What was the mood in the huddle and how did you regroup from that?
Yeah, I mean, Caden hit a great shot. They just hit an even better one. I told her, I was like, look, if you didn't hit that shot, we would have just lost the game. So our mindset, we didn't even know at the time if the shot got off in time, but we're huddling up as a team, getting ready for overtime. We just got to stay locked in. And I told the girls, I'm like, look, we're winning this game. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. We're going to win this game. And we came out. We played hard in overtime. Jada Eads played insane in overtime and really led us to that victory.
So Jada Eads is the super freshman. She, last week, was named Big East Player of the Week and Big East Freshman of the Week. This year, this week, she follows it up as your name, Big East Player of the Week. She earns another Big East Freshman of the Week. She hit a 3 to put you up by 3 with under a minute to go, and you hang on to beat Georgetown in overtime. What about playing with Jada and the composure she has? She's clearly one of the top 2 or 3 freshmen in the Big East. And what has it been like playing with her?
Hey, I mean, I don't say this statement lightly, but I don't think she's just top few in the Big East. She might be top few in the country as a freshman. She does not play like freshmen. She has the confidence out of this world, and she really has stepped up in a big way and has really helped our team and lead our team into the great positions and, you know, scoring or winning record that we have. She's just really doing a great job. You know, she's a great player. She's smart. She can score the ball. She can jump out of this world. She's small, but she's definitely mighty. That's for sure.
I love that. You know, big things come in small packages, I guess you could say. And Seton Hall has found a couple of great ones in you and Jada. But look, it's more than 2 people, right? It's more than 2. So share with us how you've been able to put together this start so far.
Yeah, no, it's definitely more than 2 people. We've come together as a team and have started to flow more and better the more we get to play with each other. I mean, Yaya had Ayanna Lopes. We call her Yaya. She had such a great game. She also scored her 1,000 points in that Georgetown game. So she came out ready to go. You know, we hit some adversity with some injuries, but our players have really stepped up. Caden Lawson came back from an injury, has been playing really solid for us and just doing great. And then we have our leadership within Amari, who really just like runs our offense, even our defense. Like the plays she makes, they might not show up on a stat sheet, but she really impacts the game and just helps us go. And even Messiah Hunter, like coming in, playing, doing what she needs to do to help our team, getting solid rebounds and just making defensive plays. you know, it's being locked in and bought in to what we got to do to get the dub and just do great.
You've challenged yourself too. You know, you're playing top 25 teams mm-hmm. and took some lumps against, I guess it was USC, yes. right? And was it LSU?
LSU, yes.
Yeah, and a very tough loss. Princeton is always a close game. Those are your three losses on the year. To Princeton and then to top 25 teams in LSU and USC. What did you learn from those losses?
Oh, gosh. I was just talking about this morning. After we played that game versus LSU, our intensity and our physicality of a team as a team has just increased so much. I think coming off that game, we realized how physical the game of basketball is and how physical we can be with a team, you know, that we have it in us. So I think since that game, our physicality and intensity and just like the way we are locked in is just on another level now. And it's really showing. And, you know, when games come down to the wire, like our past two have, we've been successful.
I don't care if it's men's or women's or whatever basketball you're playing, physicality, you know, sometimes it's about the more physical team. And it, I guess that's a life lesson for anyone who watches or plays basketball. So Faith, let's go back to the summer. All right. You had a wonderful career at Maryland and you've earned a post-grad year, an extra year, and fate brought you to Seton Hall or Villanova, and you chose Seton Hall. From what I recall, you wanted to play at home. All right. What was the selling point from Coach Bazella and the coaches, and ultimately why you chose Seton Hall?
Yeah, no, I'm definitely blessed to have the opportunity to come home and play basketball in New Jersey for the great state of New Jersey. Mm-hmm. The deciding factor really just came down to, you know, Coach Bazella instilling that confidence in me and telling me, you know, you come here, I want you to have this role, this bigger role to lead this team, play in New Jersey, come home, like allow your parents, your family, your aunts, your uncles, your friends to come back, watch you play for your last year. So I think I'm a very big family person. So I think, you know, he touched my heart a little bit with having everybody be able to come back and just play at Seton Hall. I Coach B recruited me out of high school. I knew I didn't want to stay too close, so I went a little further from home. But, you know, we kept in contact, kept that relationship. And now here I am. I got granted with a 6-year in college. So, you know, come back home and play.
Yeah, making the most of this. And Faith, listen, you're going back to your days at Manasquan, right? Three-time state champion. You're playing for a legend in Lisa Kokoda at Manasquan, one of the premier programs in all of New Jersey, 2,000-point scorer. Like, you were the man. You were the woman, right? And you go to Maryland, a top 25 team, perennial top 25 team, and you start, but, you know, you're more of a role player there mm-hmm. and had a nice career, all right? A career that most of us dream about. But you never average more than, you know, 6.9 points, right? The statistics aren't going to be there. Now, suddenly, you're at Seton Hall, and it's like Manasquan all over again. You're leading the team, right? You're the leading scorer, and you're dishing out assists and rebounds. So what Tony said, what Coach said, is prophetic here. Like, can you wrap your mind around that and what it's like to be in this position again and to come out and be the face of this team?
Yeah, I mean, playing at Maryland for 5 years, obviously my role was very different. I, you know, had to take on that role of doing whatever I needed to do to get on the court to help my team. So just whether that was hustle plays or, you know, it wasn't scoring, which was fine. And I really embraced that role. And then coming here, having to change that role, it was definitely difficult, you know, going into the summer and then like the first few games, having to get used to that new role and even the mindset of it. But one thing that you just have to like focus on is it's just doing you and enjoying it. And I think this year I'm really, really enjoying basketball. I mean, it's fun. It's a different mindset. It's a different role, but it's really exciting and it's cool and it's fun.
So I bet it's fun. You know, winning is always fun, but listen, you took your lumps this year too. And you're right now in the thick of things in the Big East. The team was predicted 7th. You're currently 4th. And there's no time to bask in this, you know, the glory of these wins, because you're going up against the Creighton team that is very good and was predicted second. They're undefeated in conference play, just like you. So if Georgetown was, you know, the biggest game to that point, this now becomes the biggest game.
Mm-hmm. No, definitely. And we're really excited for the challenge, and it's going to be fun being able to play in Walsh.
Yeah, we're obviously you're 9-1 this year. The crowd's been great. So, you know, as you continue, you look at the big picture. I know you take it one game at a time, Faith, but, you know, where would you like to see this team go?
Man, I think we do. We're taking it one game at a time, and I think we do a lot of our work behind the scenes and when no one's looking. So that way when we come out, we can shine and we can play to the best of our abilities and just play together. Obviously, our goals as a team are high. We've really seen what we can do when we all play together and we're all like locked in and keyed into what we got to do. But our goals are definitely high. We're, you know, we're obviously trying to win, mm-hmm. trying to stay with this winning streak. And at the end of the day, all we can do is just play the best of our ability, and whatever is going to happen is going to happen. But our okay. goals are definitely set high.
Spoken like a sixth-year veteran. who has played at a very high level no matter where she's been and has heard that question before. So very good. Very good. And you know, I can't let this go without asking you, all right? You play in front of family and friends. You're one of 10 siblings.
Yes,
so do you have like, you know, 20 tickets for every game?
I mean, it's nice. I have the help of my teammates who send me their extra ones. That's for sure.
I bet. So what's it like being one of 10, and where do you fall in? What number are you?
Man, I am number 6 out of 10. There's 5 boys, 5 girls, and I'm the second youngest girl. So it's definitely really exciting. It's taught me a lot of lessons throughout life and has definitely helped me throughout basketball and, like I said, life in general. But it's amazing. I love being from a big family. It's a lot of fun.
What was it like growing up? Did you all play basketball? I mean, was it just chaos? I mean, you could at one point play 5-on-5 with the kids, right?
It was a lot of fun. It was definitely chaos. We have a lot of different sports in my family. All my siblings play different sports. We had some hockey players, some baseball players, some lacrosse, even soccer at one point, basketball.
I mean, you could field every position except goalie in soccer. You could do 5-on-5 in hockey. There's a lot that could go on in the Misonis family.
We had intense sports games, you know. We used to play dodgeball. That was a fun one to play. We had a trampoline growing up, and we used to play dunk ball on the trampoline. So it was definitely a lot of fun. It was very competitive always.
Awesome. So youngest to oldest right now.
Oh, gosh. Real names or nicknames?
No, I don't need all the names. I don't need the everything. That would be fun. Okay, you know what? Go. Let's do it.
Yeah. Iggy Grace, Ellie Joe, Addie Faith, Michael, Christian, Hope, Ambrose.
Nice.
Yeah.
And age?
Age, we got, oh my gosh, 33 to soon to be 17.
33, soon to be 17. So the youngest one is a senior?
He is a junior in high school right now.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
He's a little older. He will be 17th on January 15th.
And can you still beat him 1-on-1?
He's tall. He's a football player now. But I can beat him 1-on-1.
That's what I like. All right, Faith. Had a lot of fun with you. It's a pleasure meeting you, and great to see you back home. And doing great things great things for this team at Seton Hall. So continued success, and we'll be following you and hope to see you very soon.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
All right. Faith Misonis, 1 of 10. 1 of 10. Did she say Iggy? I couldn't even hear all those names. I'm so bad at names. I am ashamed. I don't remember one of them. She just rattled off 10 names, and I can't even remember one. Imagine her parents trying to get them all in for dinner. Whew. A lot of fun times in the Misonis family. A lot of fun times at Seton Hall right now. Listen, UConn is always the team to beat in the Big East Conference. It's no different this year. All right. But Creighton is right there. And whenever it's been, right, whenever you've had this success that UConn has had for as long as we can remember with Gino Auriemma, you're always playing for second place, which isn't a bad thing, okay? Because UConn is dominated for that long as they have played in the Big East. But if UConn is one and Seton Hall could be two or three, you're putting yourself right there for an at-large bid if you don't somehow win the automatic bid in the Big East, all right? So that is the goal. Whether or not Seton Hall finishes there, we'll see. They were predicted seventh. Right now, they're overachieving. Will it continue? Can they get that second or third spot in the regular season? Even top four, all right? You finish top three or four in this conference, and you're right there on the bubble. Second puts you in prime position. So keep an eye on the Seton Hall Pirates. All right, and keep an eye on the games, everyone. That will do it for this edition of the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. So much fun talking with Faith Misonis. What a great personality. What a great addition on and off the court for this Seton Hall women's basketball team. My thanks to her. My thanks to you for listening and downloading and sharing the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. I value your listenership and your dedication to this podcast. As always, enjoy the games, everyone. My name is Brian Dean of Ellis. So long.